What the Tech is brought to you by Text Expander. Text Expander helps you communicate smarter. Visit textexpander.com/podcast for 20% off your first year. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarian. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Thurrott. How you doing, Paul?
I'm okay.
Paul, it was a happy Thanksgiving. We didn't do a show last week because it was Thanksgiving week. I had a tremendously large Thanksgiving this year.
Yeah,
so, it gets bigger and bigger every year because everybody's family gets bigger. But my Thanksgiving has turned into 2 days. I have a Friday Thanksgiving and I have a Thursday Thanksgiving and a Friday Thanksgiving now.
Oh, I could never.
This is where I'm at.
I'm not particularly social, you know?
No.
Big crowds make me nuts.
You know, that's amazing, considering your entire career is based on being social.
Well, not really. I mean, I'm a writer. I mean, by definition, I want to be in a cave by myself.
Well, you're also a podcaster.
Yeah, but
author, a blogger. You do a whole bunch of shows on Thurrott.com.
Yeah.
For someone that's not very social, you are extremely social.
Okay.
You're doing this whole I don't want to be social thing really poorly.
I know. I'm not good at most things. It's the problem.
We do have a lot to talk about today, obviously. Guys, I want to remind everybody, go to Thurrott.com. Check out everything that's going on there. Thurrott Premium. I encourage everybody to sign up to Thurrott Premium. See, I was talking about how people can't say your last name, and now I'm choking on it.
Nice.
Go to Thurrott.com. Check out Thurrott Premium. Do you have your sale going right now, or is that over?
Yeah, I think it just started, actually. We have a couple things going on. Let's see if I can figure out what those are.
I'm going to go to Thurrott Premium and it's $48 for the entire year. Sign up to Thurrott Premium during the holiday sale and get it for only $48. Listen, you got 35 plus years of experience here. You got a great community of followers and readers and content creators that are all over the place. You, Brad, and everybody else do an unbelievable job there. It's literally become the first place I go to, and I say this all the time, not because we're friends, but because that's honestly the first page that I open up every day when I'm looking for tech news, because it's without the BS. I don't.
Yeah, that's in the comments.
I'm gonna say something here. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people probably take it wrong. I don't end up going to Thurrott.com and having to play mental gymnastics and figuring out if this is a paid post.
Like right.
some other websites that cover Windows, a centralized website that covers Windows, where I can't figure out what's a actual article anymore and what's a paid sponsorship.
If I could be fair to my colleagues elsewhere, I mean, obviously, the world is different now than it was 5, 10, 15 years ago. I mean, we can't really make a living with straight up advertising anymore. So
I get it.
But we go different directions. You know,
They're not the only ones that are doing it. But, you know, it's kind of difficult when you navigate and you're trying to find a review of a product. Then you're like, I don't know, a quarter through the article and you realize, there's Amazon links all over this place. Yeah. And this is probably a paid spot. I get it. Right. It's fine. Right. I understand. It just gets a little complicated. Sometimes I just want technology news, and I don't want to buy an iPhone case or some wireless charger.
Yep. I mean, We're working on the iPhone case idea, though. I think that's a winner.
Can we get a Thurrott iPhone case?
With a T logo on it or something. Sure.
Did you see what John Prosser did? He called out the Unbox Therapy this week. Okay. So the guy for Unbox Therapy did he has his own iPhone case now, right?
Of course he does.
And he was talking about how it's super thin. It's like the best one. And he kind of figured out that it's a mass. There's nothing.
Well, of course, it has to be something he, you know, is putting his logo on or something.
Technically, what he did was he went to Alibaba, ordered. added a little bit of customization to a certain iPhone case that exists already, and now he's selling it as his. And so he called him out on it. He's like, listen, you could be honest and say that you've reviewed this case before. It was a case that you reviewed a while ago. It's become this huge thing. It blew up. So I told John, I texted him, and I took a screenshot while watching him on the TV. watching him on the TV. This young kid was on my TV. Right. And I wrote, I go, man, how do you walk around with giant balls like that?
Right.
You know, and you know it's what?
A, well, I will say from experience that it is, as someone who has large balls, I assume in his case, it's the same. I mean, it's done with great reluctance, you know, but you feel morally compelled, you know, when someone else is doing something that's kind of shitty, you know, to call them out on it. I mean, I hate going after individuals, but every once in a while, it kind of warrants it, you know?
I feel you do it a lot less. So do I. I mean, I've gotten a little bit less out of my mind than I was.
No, like I said, I don't want to do that. I mean, that's not, I don't know. I don't want it to get all weird and personal, but sometimes you just see something that's really crappy.
Yeah.
And you feel like you have to act on it, you know?
I see it all the time when it comes to reviewing a product, and it really bothers me. I feel that these reviews, and you know, there are a lot of genuine people out there that go out there and try to do the most honest review that they could. And there are other ones that are doing everything for the click, and they haven't actually used the device. And I'm going to talk about this new MacBook that I purchased that got unbelievable reviews. We discussed a little bit 2 weeks ago when we were doing the show about this MacBook and how everybody's praising the MacBook. And I had some hands-on time with it, and I actually did buy it. It was enough of a change for me to buy, and it's only because I needed a new work laptop that I wasn't buying for myself.
Right.
And I needed something that just this is what I wanted. I didn't want to change anything. I got a bunch of customized stuff on this computer. I have a bunch of software that I use to manage the social media stuff. So it's very specific for my needs. Again, if I was buying a computer right now, it would probably be the Microsoft Surface laptop. That would probably be my laptop.
That would definitely be in my top five for sure.
And you know what? I'm going to tell you why. It's a 15-inch laptop. It's mobile. You could actually take this thing around. It's an actual portable device, unlike the MacBook Pro. The new MacBook Pro is no longer a portable device. Yes, you could put it in your bag, but I don't think you want to. It is really
fun. I mean, to be fair, I mean, well, I don't know fair, but just to point this out, I mean, in many ways, they're a different class of device because obviously with the 15-inch, 16-inch MacBook Pro, you're getting some form of dedicated graphics with lots of RAM. And you don't really see that on the on the Surface laptop side, but that also begs the question. I mean, why doesn't Apple make a machine like that? I mean, if people want a bigger screen, it seems to me like there should be a MacBook Air that competes with the Surface laptop at 15 inches, you know, or whatever size, in addition to 13.
I had to close the door. Sorry about that, Paul. I agree with you 100%. So I've had a week with this device. So I'm going to give you my 1 week review. The keyboard.
Have you had back problems yet, or how does that work?
Well, I've actually been carrying.
You have to wear one of those, like Paul, people work in a supermarket wear around their waist.
The brace, the back brace. So I've been traveling with the 15 inch and the 16 inch laptop every day.
Oh, jeez. So you're doing like curls?
Well, I do squats with them. That's what I do.
Nice.
I sit there
the stairs,
and I do squats.
Squatting on each step.
Yeah. I sit there and I just do squats and my legs are unbelievable now. The keyboard is so much better. I'm just going to put that out there. I would rank this keyboard on 1 to 10, 10 being the best keyboard that I probably use, and it's probably the older generation MacBooks, and I would put the HP EliteBook that I have, which you have as well. I would put those two up there. I don't know. How do you rank yours? What's your what's your 10?
Yeah. My favorite is the EliteBook. So this is the EliteBook 1040. I think it's a G2. It's the latest version, 14-inch. It's not perfect, but as far as the layout, because there's weirdness around the arrow keys. But as far as like the throw, if you will, and the keys, the key feel, the typing feel, it is perfect. Neck and neck with that almost. So maybe just like a little bit down, I would put the latest Surface computer. So the Surface Book 2. I don't have a Surface Laptop 3, but the Surface Laptop 2, is right there. Those are fantastic.
I would say I haven't had enough time with the Laptop 3.
Yeah.
So I can't. I wish I could say that, you know.
I bet it's right there.
It's most likely, but well, from the limited time that I had, was up there. But for my everyday use, I would say the older generation MacBook keyboards.
I think what you're hitting on with the new MacBook is interesting because Apple previously with the MacBook Air and then with the previous gen MacBook Air with the pre-Butterfly keyboard MacBook Pros had what I would have called like an excellent keyboard experience. And so this new one is like less of a throw, I guess, if that makes sense. It's a 1 millimeter. I'm missing the term. I'm sorry, but the key throw essentially is 1 millimeter. These days, most people think the sweet spot is somewhere 1.3, 1.4. They used to be really loosey-goosey, like, you know, 1.5 and up, depending, you know, on the keyboard. Like, I think the Lenovos are a little loose from where they should be, but are very good. I bet that keyboard is excellent. I've never used it. I'll just throw that out there. I bet it's fantastic.
If I'm going to rank everything, okay, let's go do a 1 to 10. I would say nothing is a 10. I would say a 9 for me, my own use, would be the older generation MacBook keyboards, MacBook Pros.
Okay. The pre-Butterfly.
Pre-Butterfly. Okay.
So you think those were better than the new one?
Well, yes. Yes.
Okay. Now, why is that?
It just the layout. I feel...
Okay.
I still got to get kind of used to this throw, so I'm not committing 100%, but I would say this is an 8.5.
Okay.
If that's a 9.
So I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Number one was the old MacBook Pros.
The old MacBook Pros.
Number two is what?
Number two would probably be the HP. EliteBook. This would be somewhere right up there with it. Below the old MacBook.
Yeah.
And maybe a little below the Lenovo, the HP, but right up there as far as the keyboard and the comfort of it. I think the chiclets are a little big on these.
Okay, interesting.
And the spacing isn't much.
Okay, there used to be more of a space on the old MacBook Air, MacBook Pro.
Yeah, a little bit more space, but it was also raised more, so you could kind of feel. On this one, however, on the 15-inch 2019 prior, it's terrible. The thing that it wasn't that bad when everybody was complaining about it for me. I'm going to tell you that. I'm going to be honest. It didn't feel terrible. It started feeling bad after about a year and a half of having it, where the throw, it just doesn't register. You got to pound on this thing.
And I will say the Butterfly keyboard had a slight throw, right? I don't know if it was 0.5, 0.7. It was something under one. It actually did move. It kind of, if you look at it, you can see like there's movement, but it's not much. There was something, I think the thing that Apple was onto was this notion of those keyboard throws, the key throws getting smaller. They went too far, you know, but I think there was the germ of an idea there. And I think with the, as I slip into a Boston accent for some reason, I think when they moved to this new keyboard, they wanted to retain that, you know, the short throw, but in a traditional scissor switch.
Well, they had to keep it primarily thin.
Yeah.
Because
it's
thicker. I'll tell you that. It is thicker.
Right. Sure.
And it's heavier. I find, you know, that's hard to believe considering how heavy this thing is, but it's heavier.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
But I'm pretty pleased with it. Now, everybody's talking about the specs and everything, how it's not that much of a spec bump when you're talking about, I got the 8-core.
Right.
I got the high, it's the 8-core with the 550 Radeon.
That's octa-core. So hexa-core is 6-core and octa-core, I guess they call it.
I use this thing called iStat so I could see what's taking up the CPU and everything on this thing. It's crazy to see 8 bars on the top of the CPU. it's really weird because you're so used to seeing 4 or, you know, whatever, but it's a little crazy to see that. But performance wise, like I'm getting everything done primarily the same speed, maybe a little quicker. But the biggest question is for me, and a lot of these laptops, and maybe on the Windows side, it's the same. A lot of these laptops are dual GPU'd, right? Where they have the Intel built in, but they also have whatever is on board, right?
Yep.
I feel like on the Mac, it tends to use the Intel GPU a lot more.
When you say Intel, you mean the integrated
graphics. Yeah, the integrated.
which, well, I mean, for standard productivity apps, that's probably what should be used, right? You want to break out the multi-core thing you were talking about, 6 or 8 cores in the CPU plus whatever the graph of the GPU is. Those kind of things are going to kick in when you're compiling source code and Xcode, when you're using Photoshop or some Adobe creative app or similar creative app.
Yes,
but if you're just using, you know, web browser.
Certain applications it engages. Yeah, certain it I does think so. Not.
Games, it seems like it should.
Many games on the Mac, it does not work.
Yeah, I don't know why that would be.
Which is bizarre. Yeah.
I don't know how that works on the Mac, but it seems like games should be savvy to the GPU.
And there's a thing you could do in Terminal to kind of switch it to the, not the integrated, but the onboard one.
Right.
But your battery life is going to suffer. So, you know, you want to constantly go back and forth. But regardless, I think it's, I do agree that this should have been the laptop that they built in 2016 when they built this laptop. I don't think it's a laptop for 2020.
Yeah,
I fear the purchase of this will be obsolete in a year from now.
This is truer of phones, but I was just thinking about this. You and I and many others have spent the past several years ripping on Apple because of their just every year, everything's thinner, 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 smaller, smaller. And then you hit onto you get into these ludicrous areas like the butterfly keyboard of the MacBook Pro. But one of the things that you know, if you were to go back and look at like an iPhone XS or I guess a 10 or 10S, 10S? Why does that sound wrong? Yeah, 10S. I don't personally think the battery life thing was a big issue. And if you disagree with that, it's fine. But you could have gotten the battery case to solve the problem, you know?
You could have.
This year, these things are like tanks now.
It is. It's
and I find myself in the uncomfortable position, and I know I will be called out on this, and so I'm a little leery of saying it because I just know people will take it the wrong way. But I feel like they went in the wrong direction with the iPhone 10, 11 Pro Max and Pro, you know, 11 Pro, whatever. Like, I think they're too thick and they're too heavy.
I agree with
shocking
you.
To me, like how dense they are.
It is shockingly thick. It is shockingly
I use a lot
heavy.
Of phones, you know, this one it's noticeable when you pick it up. It's like a piece of lead.
But I'm going to tell you, if I had the choice, if Apple offered me a thinner one compared, which they do, right? They have one. I would opt in for this. I would opt
for the thicker one.
The thicker one because the battery life is remarkable.
Yep. Okay. Well, okay. But I think the battery life on the last few generations has been fine. And I know, listen, everyone has different situations. I will say you living in New York and you commuting into New York and going into the city is going to be a big hit on battery life because you get all those buildings to deal with.
Exactly.
You're in and out of network coverage. It's straining to connect to a network all day long, you know, probably. And I'm sure that's part of the issue. But that's sort of my point, you know. For situations like that, if you're having an issue, you just get the battery case, you know, and then you have the benefit of that battery life when you need it. Also, I mean, seriously, you're not, and I'm not singling out you, but you as a typical person in a sense, like commuting and whatnot, you're not going into the desert, you know, you're, if you're, how bad could your battery life be? All you have to do is get to a place you can plug it in, you know, like what's the difference?
Listen, I agree with you. I get it, but I think when you're running around the city,
I know.
For me, it's extremely necessary to have this.
Get the battery case. That to me would be the point. Like, just get the battery case. Like, I think for the majority of people, this thing is overkill from a battery and thickness and weight standpoint. And what I base that on is that I use a bunch of different phones, and this is by far the biggest and the thickest and the heaviest.
I'm going to tell you, I did a comparison with my Samsung a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
My S10 and this. Oh my God. It's not, it one feels, you know, when you used to go into the cell phone shop, they used to have the fake cell phones in the display.
Yes.
That's what it's like. It feels like a fake cell phone. It feels like there's nothing inside.
Yeah. So here's what I would compare it to. When you were a kid, like I would be playing basketball or something and you would do these exercises and drills. So one of the things you would do is throw around a medicine ball. A medicine ball is just like a really thick, dense
ball. Yes, it feels like a medicine ball.
Yeah, and it's really hard to throw because it's really heavy. You sit there and you throw the thing back and forth, throw it back and forth. And then someone throws you a basketball and you throw it, and you throw it through the ceiling because comparatively the basketball weighs nothing and you're so used to throwing this really heavy thing. And that really heavy thing is like the iPhone. You know, so you pick up like another phone and it almost seems to fly off the table because it's so light. I don't have battery life problems with actually any modern phone personally. My needs are not your needs for sure. I mean, I work at home, so whatever, but I feel like this battery thing, like Apple absolutely went too far in one direction, and we saw it across their product lines, right? Not just the phone, but you know, laptops and so forth. And that's what we were talking about, but this got to be like a middle ground here, right? I mean, you know, like the previous generation 15 inch or the 13 inch Pro MacBook Pro with a real keyboard. Okay. I mean, what are we talking about here? Are we going to add like an eighth of an inch to the thickness of this thing? Just make that. Like, why? Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why they're so big and thick.
I hope someone ISOs you on that one.
So
I want that clip all over you, yeah, all over Twitter. That's going to happen.
So in both cases, this is my personal take on Apple. This is almost like an FU. In both cases, the new iPhone and the new MacBook Pro, it's like you people have been complaining that our products are too thin, the battery life is not good enough. Now you're going to have to shut up because this is what it looks like when we fix that problem. Yeah. And I don't think that's fair because I don't think it has to look like this. I think there is a happy middle ground. And they just, Apple is just give. So,
that's the thing. You're gonna have to give something away for that. The thinness thing. Everybody loved the design of the 2016, but they were flawed with numerous issues, like the heating issues. It would overheat. Yeah. It would overheat tremendously. Where sure. I mean, right now on the sick, I can't touch this area. I was telling Paul here. I'm gonna do this. This top metal piece here, I cannot touch. It's right. Too hot. It's brutal. So they had all these problems. They released the device.
Yeah.
It took them 3 freaking years to realize it's not good. And their answer to this was, well, let's put a Band-Aid on. Let's fix the keyboard. Let's make everything thicker so it stays cool. And there you go. Problem solved, guys. And you got an extra half an inch.
Yeah.
This display size. That doesn't matter to anybody.
I know.
That half inch.
I know.
Nobody. All right, so Apple also released their list of top apps. So we constantly play this game where we kind of go in the app store on our phones and on our laptops, and mm-hmm. we kind of see what the top apps are. And it's always fascinating to me on mm-hmm. what the top apps are. So Apple released the best apps of the year. They do this every year right. around Christmas. So when
I
you
assume
get
this is on
device,
the phone, too, somewhere.
It should be in the app store. Yeah, it's also on Therot.com. So. You go to Therot.com.
Right. It's on my website.
It's on your website.
Yeah, no, I mean right. I mean, the actual list or whatever.
Yeah, so I found it interesting. The number one iPhone app was something. Mm-hmm. It was called the Spectre Camera app, and it's a long exposure app. I've heard really good stuff about this. I was surprised this was the top app on the iPhone side.
Yep.
It's an interesting app. I've used it before. You know, I'm on their website.
I've never even heard of this one.
You could get it to look good, these photos, but yeah. It's a difficult thing to do long exposure imaging.
Well, you need a tripod or some way to mount the phone.
Yeah. So it's an interesting device, and I'm fascinated to see it number one. The number one app for the iPad was Flow, which is a drawing app. The Mac app of the year was Affinity.
Right.
The publisher app, which
yep.
Interesting that was number one. Explorer for the Apple TV. It's a network of,
I don't know what that is.
It's Explorer network, so it's people traveling. That's what I'm assuming.
Here's the camera app I want for the iPhone, Andrew. Yeah, I want the Apple camera app, but with two options. One is called Leave the Damn HDR On All the Time and Stop Touching It. And the other one is called, here's a toggle switch for night mode. I'm fine with their camera app. Just give me those two features.
You can't toggle? I thought you could.
Did they add that? Because originally the deal was it comes on only when Apple thinks you need it.
Yeah, you can actually. You could turn it on whenever you
want. Which one are you talking about?
The night mode.
Night mode. Oh, maybe they added that.
Yeah. So
okay. You could turn I stopped. It on. There's actually a night mode, you're saying.
Yes, there is.
Where is it?
Well, okay, so open the app.
Yep.
Hold your camera. You see that little shaded half arrow moon thing? Next
half
to,
moon?
No, yeah, next to the flash symbol.
Oh, okay.
There you go. I feel like I'm calling my dad.
No, that's a timer. Wait.
No. That's the night mode.
That's night mode. Okay, that wasn't there originally.
No, it wasn't.
Right? I think that's someone.
Do you want me to show you how to install your favorite applications next?
Yeah, please. Would you? Could you tell me where I can stream the next Apple keynote? Because I'm always unclear on how that works.
You know what we could play? We could play Leo Laporte the Tech Guy.
Are you sure that's
and
what
you
that
could
is?
Call into the show and I could just answer your questions. We could do that.
Oh, I see. Okay. Oh, look at that. Good.
You found
okay.
it. Good. I'm glad.
Good. That they did one. Right. Okay, one of the two things I want.
Tina from Rancho Cucamonga, you're on the air.
Nice.
All right. Let's see what else they had. Apple TV Game of the Year was Wonder Boy. Apple Arcade Game of the Year was Cyronia Wild Hearts. Never heard of it. Mac Game of the Year is Gris, GRIS, and the iPad Game of the Year is Hyper Light Driver.
The Gris game barely beat out Briss, which is a terrible game.
Briss?
nobody
Apple
liked it.
Apple also released the list of top apps and games. So this was hand curated. Obviously, top apps were things like YouTube, Instagram, Snapchat, and TikTok leading the way.
TikTok, wow.
TikTok. Some of the video streaming spotlights also for the iPad were YouTube, Netflix, and Amazon. Very interesting how also Minecraft took the top place for top paid iPhone and iPad game.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it is becoming a little bit of the same old compared to years past where you would kind of see different applications. It just, I feel like they've done what they've done. You know, there's not right. too much more you could do to this. I think the bigger question on the Apple side is the Mac Store, where they promised all these publishers to release their iPad and their essentially yeah. their iOS yeah. apps on yep. the Mac. And it's suffering the same issues that Microsoft has with their store, where they're having getting developers to develop these apps.
This one doesn't make any sense to me, right? Because as we have discussed in the build up to this release, there are millions and millions of iPad apps out there, and many of them would look great and work great on the Mac.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like this was a no-brainer. This is going to happen. And, wow, there seems to be very little interest in this.
You're getting more and more, obviously, but the fact...
Is there a place in the store where you can actually find these apps? Do they have that kind of thing?
They used to have it. I just opened it up. I don't see it anymore. They may have mixed it together. They yeah. had a section that said your favorite iOS apps now here. Apple, okay, apps you love now on the Mac. Here you go. We've
okay.
done this before. It's a lot of it is productivity apps. Like
that's fine. I mean, that's
like
fine.
Vector Art, GoodNotes 5, okay. a dictionary yep. for $9.
Right.
$10. Crew, a messaging app, Twitter. I have to talk to you about this Twitter app. Okay. Holy moly, what a big piece of crap this thing is. On the Mac, it's just a lot.
That's interesting.
It's e-signing apps and PDF applications and Zoho, all the Zoho apps, obviously on there.
Right.
There's nothing that you would be like, you know what? That's really awesome. But the reality is, what apps are you really using other than Instagram and Twitter and YouTube and I think those.
Well, okay, but this is a. This is a different problem than we see on Windows, right? Because the apps exist on the iPad side. Like there are great apps. You can make whatever case you want to make for people do things differently on a portable device than they do on a computer. That's fine. But for that argument to be made, we have to have the apps available so we can see that no one is downloading them. What's happening is the app developers are not bringing their apps over. And so there's a couple of reasons for this, right? Potential reasons. One is that the act of doing that and making them work well on a Mac is more difficult than what Apple claimed it would be. And then the other one is just ambivalence, that there is an audience of 900 million on iOS and whatever it is on iPad, so several hundred million certainly. And the potential audience on the Mac is a subset of the 100 million that they say they have on that platform. Most of whom already own the iOS device, iPadOS devices, whatever. and don't necessarily want to run those apps on the Mac. That the Mac is like a PC. It's used for work. It's used for complex desktop apps. The mobile apps, you know, that's the perception, you know, that we don't necessarily, by and large, want most of those apps on that platform. And I maybe, you know, maybe. I don't know. I, like I said before, I, this to me makes sense. This happens to me a lot. You know, I see things that I think make sense and they don't really take off and I can't explain it. So I don't know.
Yeah. I do want to talk about the battle for cloud gaming that's going to come this year. We've already seen somewhat of what we're going to do with the Project xCloud, the PS Now, and Google Stadia. Sorry. What do you make of this? Do you think this is going to be the year that we get this going? Because here's the thing. A lot of people have done the review of the Stadia. And
yeah, then they're done.
And they they've done the review. And I've seen, you know what, one or two reviewers complaining about glitching and just issues, connectivity issues. That's one thing. I understand that. You're going to have that depending on where you are. But I've seen numerous people complain about issues with glitching out and kind of connectivity issues.
Well, I've not used Stadia, so I just want to be clear about that. But I will say, and I should also add, I pre-ordered it. I was going to get the Founders Edition. And then they announced that there were going to be like 20 games, like 12 games or whatever it was at first. And I was like, yeah, forget it. This is stupid. And the couple things that go into this. You know, this thing, I'm not inventing this phrase. I'm trying to get this exactly right. Somebody had a headline or a blurb that said something like, yes, Stadia is terrible, but it's no more terrible than Android was in 2008. And that's an interesting point because
that's a very interesting statement to make.
Yeah. Right. Right. Because one of the big kind of memes around Stadia is, oh, it's a Google product. Just wait until they cancel it. Right. But actually, Google does stick with some things for a long time, too, like Android. Yeah. So one of the potential outcomes for the service is that it is popular and that it will get better and better. And so, you know, we'll see. I think the problem for Google is manifold, but one of the problems is like, what is the audience here? What are you targeting, you know, with this? If you're a hardcore gamer, you're not leaving the PC. There's an audience for, you know, console gamers, and those people have kind of lined up with the console of consoles that they like, and they're not moving anywhere. There is a huge world of casual gamers that occur, and that gaming occurs mostly on phones, I would say, but mobile, let's say mobile devices. And what's the niche for Google? Like, Apple Arcade makes sense because Apple has an audience that's waiting to throw money at them. So people will make this argument. Someone made this argument today in my comments about Apple News Plus, which is one of the most worthless services ever made. And it's like, well, I like getting a high-quality content, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, those people exist, you know? And they exist for Apple Arcade. That game that you said was the Apple Arcade game of the year. No idea what that is. No idea. Don't care. But there's a built-in audience for that. And so we can make fun of Apple or we can make fun of whatever this product or service is. But the truth is there is an audience. Google, Stadia, like I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know what their audience is.
I don't know either. And they only have 20 titles currently, but yeah. Listen, I think it's technology that's going to be implemented in something else. That's how I see this. You know, xCloud, for example, right? We know that's Microsoft's future of gaming. At the end of the day, we could argue that the hardcore gamer isn't going to want to stream it because of issues. But the reality is you're streaming anyway currently. Almost all these games you're playing streaming. And Microsoft would have the capability of doing this because they already have the platform of users.
Right. And not to mention a gigantic infrastructure that has been built up over many years that involves not just the technical back end stuff, but also the relationships with game studios and publishers and so forth.
Xbox Live. I mean, obviously that's something that they've learned from. How many years have they been doing this?
The question here to me is like, if you look at like how people game, one of the tricks is one of the things that all of the people involved with this right now are trying to solve is, how do you bring people forward with you as they move to different things? they go to different platforms, maybe they upgrade their phone or whatever they do. Like, how do you move them along? Like, if you're a PC gamer and you're worried about, or I'm sorry, if you're a PC game maker and you're worried about where the world's going, like what's going to happen to these people? Like, what happens when you don't have to buy a PC to play these games? Like, you could play Red Dead Redemption 2 or whatever on Stadia. So it's like, I don't need a PC anymore. Like, what's the point? Is there a way you can bring those people forward with you? You know, make Steam just as, you know, valuable to people that have moved on to consoles or to, not to consoles, but to the mobile devices or whatever. I don't know. I think the thing that Microsoft has done right is they're bringing forward people's game libraries and progressions and achievements. Like, it's just Xbox Live. It doesn't matter if you're playing on a PC. It doesn't matter if you're playing on a console. And increasingly, it's not going to matter if you're playing on a mobile device or whatever you've chosen. Sony, we don't know how they're going to do it, but I suspect it's going to be something like what Microsoft is doing that's going to be valuable to that audience. And the Google thing, they're starting from scratch, but the value proposition there is you buy a game and you can play it anywhere. You know?
Yeah.
It's not really true today, but it will be true in the next 12 months.
Yeah, listen, I agree with you 100%. This is going to be an interesting year to see how this turns out. I think PlayStation is fine with this. I think, you know, they have their user base that's, they're going to be using it. I mean, it's fine. It's going to be, you know, $10 or whatever it is right now on the Xbox. It's free if you're in. Obviously, it's not going to be free. We could kind of assume what the pricing model is going to be for this, but.
Well, but Microsoft has a set of online services. Yeah. And at some point, xCloud is not going to become another service. It's part of a service. Like, it's
part of it. Yeah.
We could call it Xbox Live Gold. You can call it whatever you want. It doesn't really, Xbox Game Pass, whatever.
I mean, currently, there's a whole bunch of games that work on this too, X for X Cloud.
Yeah, they already have, like, I think there are 50 games 50, now.
Yeah, 50 plus, yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It'll be hundreds. I mean, they're going to be hundreds.
Yeah. Do you give me some Windows news since we are running out of time here? give me some Windows news before I get yelled at for that we didn't discuss.
I mean, the big news is that Microsoft is on the cusp of completing Windows 10 version 20H1 or 2004 or whatever, however you want to say that. That's interesting, right? Because they first started testing this thing last February. It's the first time they'd ever jumped ahead to test not the next version, but the version after that. A lot of speculation around, well, this must be a huge release because they're testing it a year in advance. It's not. It's a very minor release. From a basic user experience standpoint, you're not going to notice any differences at all. Doesn't mean there aren't new things going on. There are, but by and large, day to day, you'll upgrade that thing. You won't even know what happened, you know?
What are the, so we're looking at sometime in March, right? For 2001.
Yeah, but they could literally finalize it sometime in the next few weeks. Like, it's done. It's already done. There are no new features coming. Like, it's done. Right now, it's done. Very interesting.
That is interesting.
This has never happened before. So my speculation on this is that we know that Microsoft is coming up with something called Windows 10X next fall, and that Windows 10X will ship on new devices like the Surface Neo, but also devices from third parties. We know Lenovo and Dell have already said they're making them, and everyone's going to make, you know, well, not everyone, but a lot of the PC makers will make some form of Windows 10X dual screen device. Fine. But Windows 10X is Windows 10. It has this kind of a new container system for running Win32 apps. It has new support for dual screen device, you know, blah, blah, blah. This is new stuff. So yeah. I think that there were changes made to the kind of the foundational layers, the core part of Windows 10, and that Microsoft needed time to make sure that that stuff worked fine.
For Windows 10X.
And so we're going to get this, you know, 20H1, whatever you want to call that, release in the spring. It's not going to seem like a major, major release. It is going to be installed like a major release. You know, it's a feature update. A lot of people are going to just think, what is this? There's nothing here. But I think there was stuff under the covers. And I think that's going to be exposed for Windows 10X. And of course, that won't ship until the fall. And that will be 20H2. But they wanted to make sure they had this thing in the can a long time ahead of time. I wish they had just kind of said this, to be honest. I mean, I realized in the beginning there was some secrecy around 10X, but now that we know 10X is happening, it seems like they should have come out and said, hey, guys, this is why we, this explains 20H1. That's why
they you know? Still have,
everyone would have been happy with that
detail, you know, explain mm-hmm. what's going on with it. Right. We're still kind of,
yeah.
we're looking at a year from now and we really don't have yep. the concept of, you know, we understand the core of what it is, but beyond that.
Oh, there's all kinds of stuff they haven't talked about. They've never explained this, whatever the container system they're using for Win32 apps. Right now, they have said it's an Intel-based thing, but when you look at Windows 10X, I mean, don't you kind of think like ARM would make sense for this kind of thing?
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot more information to come. They sometime in the past week or so, they talked at a very high level about the developer story there. And I mean, the story today is, if you're a developer and you want to target dual screen apps, send us an email. You know, it's literally that non-public. It's very strange, but I, you know, when Build comes around next May, I think it is, that's Microsoft's developer show. We'll probably hear, you know, more about the 10X developer story yeah. by that point.
Interesting. And one yeah. other quick thing, Apple is rumored to be working on an iPad and MacBook. My apologies, that feature a mini LED display.
Hey, Andrew.
Yes.
My screen has gone black.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, there it's back.
There we
it's
go. Back. So sorry.
Never mind.
You can hear me, though.
No, it's okay.
Mini yeah, LED. Mini LED.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of OLED.
Right.
Why is this a cost measure or?
I have no idea.
I don't know.
It's
either.
Like there are so many permutations of these screens now, it's hard to understand what the rationale is for choosing one over another. I mean, yeah, it's probably a some combination of cost reduced and
yeah. Well, you don't get OLED burn, which I have a lot of
yeah.
on some of my displays. It's pretty much the same benefits from what I remember for many LED panels, where it has the same benefits of localized dimming and the color gamut mm-hmm. that you normally would, but
okay.
You don't have the burn in, and I believe it's cheaper.
Yeah, I bet it's cheaper. I'm sure that's the primary benefit. Yeah. Not that they'll advertise it as such, but I bet that's the big deal.
Yeah. All right, guys. A little quick show today. Paul, next week, next Tuesday, is that good for you?
Yeah, I think so.
Excellent. If you're listening to this on podcast or watching on YouTube, be sure to go to Patreon, patreon.com/whatthetech. You could sign up for as little as $1 per week, and you get access to our bonus show, which I am going to, I have a subject that I want to talk to Paul about. I don't know. Have you seen The Irishman yet?
I have.
Okay. Let's not ruin it. I want to talk to you about this. Polarizing discussion right. here. Everybody's
yeah,
freaking
maybe.
Out over this. People are
okay.
freaking out. Some people okay. love it. Others hate it. I want to go yeah. into this with you because this is a hot topic. We're doing like yeah. a morning. We're doing like a morning like View style show. We're coming up with a hot topic right. segment next. We're going to take a break. You go to our website, abc.com, to check the hot topic segment. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Obviously, you can follow me at Andrew Zarin. You can follow Paul at The Rot on Twitter. Of course, therot.com. Go there. Check it out. Also, The Rot Premium. They're running a winter sale, a holiday sale right now. What is it, $48? You get unbelievable amount of content. You and Brad do a show daily. You and I do a show. You also do a show with Leah Laporte and Mary Jo Foley. You are a one-man podcast machine at this point. You're broadcasting every day, sometimes twice a day, sometimes three times a day, which is unbelievable.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Nobody's proud of this. Nobody's
proud. You should be very proud of what you do. You are. You've been doing this for many, many years now. So it's amazing to see right. how far you've come. You were just a little boy, and now you're
yep,
a grown man
yep.
doing a podcast.
Yep.
All right,
hair
guys,
used to
that's
be
it
dark.
For this week. See you next time.